It's the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello, welcome once again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from The Guardian, read by Charlotte Green.
A 66-year-old Scarborough pensioner has been sent a council tax bill for a penny, but she's been told she can pay in instalments.
Well, thank you, David Davis of Scarborough, for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. We'll be welcome first, on my right, Guardian columnist Francis Wheen, and the man who speaks to the nation, Jeremy Hardy. Facing them on my left, from the World at One, Nick Clark, and the man without whom the news quiz wouldn't be the news quiz, Alan Corran. Before we start round one, here's an item spotted in the St. Wolstan's Parish News.
I went to visit Mrs. Vaughan in Shrubbery Avenue Nursing Home last Monday, and despite her 93 years, she recognised me and sent her lover to everyone.
Lucky devil. Thank you, George Cowley of Worcester, for that. Francis, you get the first question. Who gave the bill the power to stop by a guillotine?
I think this is our old friend, Mr. Persistent Offender, isn't it?
Yes.
The Home Secretary.
Yes, right.
Who's been a very busy boy this week. He's going to introduce a new law which will deal with persistent offenders, such as himself. He's been caught all the time, that man, for one misdemeanor or another. And he's also introduced a law that will allow the police to stop you without any grounds for thinking that you're up to anything, and take your shoes off and search them, and then they inspect your underwear and send you on your way with a cuff around the ear. And this was pushed through the House of Commons in record time because he said it was an emergency. He had to have a full underwear inspection before the Easter weekend. So there was no debate, no scrutiny, no nothing, and Jack Straw said, I quite agree, this is urgent. Why it's so urgent was not explained, but they know because they're in charge, so we have to take their word for it. That's what he's done.
Right. It's the SOS law, isn't it?
That's right.
They've re-established the SOS law. In an effort to combat Irish Republican paramilitary activity, they've re-established the SOS law to target young black men.
Well, there are a lot of black Irish terrorists at loose at the moment.
Because before that, the PTI only allowed for the random persecution of anybody with an Irish name, passport or record collection, but now it's broadening out. It's a very interesting thing about the Ring of Steel around the city, because 80% of the people who were stopped when the police were looking for possible Irish terrorists with car bombs were young Afro-Caribbean men.
With things in their pockets.
The black Irish.
Yes.
There you go.
Michael Howard argued police need to look inside clothing at will because of recent terrorist acts. Who knows, if only they've been able to check a few pockets for a concealed 10-ton lorry bomb. Jeremy.
Yes?
Where will you soon find more bookings than books?
Would this be David Blunkett?
It would be
David Blunkett's red and yellow card scheme. David Blunkett decided to be nice to teachers for a change, having lambasted them for a couple of years, because he's recognised that teachers often face all sorts of disruption and attack from maladjusted Ofsted inspectors who disturb the whole classroom, stop the teachers from doing their jobs properly, upset all the other children. And it's really no solution to just expel these Austin inspectors to other schools where they just behave equally badly. Final solution's got to be found to deal with them, and that's what this is about.
That's
is it?
Yes, indeed. It is the plan by the Labour Party to introduce red and yellow cards to discipline school children. Labour's education spokesman, Jimmy Hill, explained that they needed to speak to the kids in a language that they understood, which ruled out English. Labour's football approach to education contrasts with the Tories' traditional education policy based on English cricket. Regular thrashings, and everyone gets out before tea. Move along now to Nick. Your question now, Nick. Who's been asked to put his soapbox on the box?
This is an attempt to tempt out Mr. John Major to debate, is it?
Yeah.
It is. He first of all thought it was quite a good idea, and now he's decided that he doesn't want to debate with Mr. Tony Blair, and the only one who's really, really keen is Paddy Ashton. Although three-way debates are never incredibly successful, are they? It's a bit like three-way jousting in medieval times. It doesn't really work. You know, where do you put your lance? You know what I mean? And consequently, it'll never happen, basically.
Well, it will happen, because Major said, when Major was rejecting it, he said it would be a stupid publicity stunt, so he's bound to do it.
well, that as may be, as they say. This is John Major, who's been challenged to an American-style TV debate, an offer he has so far declined, although he admitted that the prize of winning such a contest would be great. Electoral success, or if he's really in luck, a Ford Fiesta. The possibility of having both John Major and Tony Blair on TV at the same time has excited the BBC, who think they may be an ideal replacement for Anne and Nick.
I think, actually, it's going to go to Sky, isn't it? On one of those pay-per-view things, like the Bruno Tyson fight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
As long as it only lasts as long as that.
Yes, that's a thought.
What a mighty clash of charismas it'll be, won't it? Blair and Major.
It'll be like Cowden Beath versus Stenhouse Muir. On a wet Wednesday
and
afternoon.
And Arbroath, remember the
with
three
the floodlights failing.
Arbroath, good God. Alan, here's a piece of music for you. Soul House by Shakin' Stevens. Your question is, oh, it's tricky, this one. Who isn't with the Woolwich?
Oh. When I saw that name leap out of the paper, it took me back 400 years. He was called Peter Robinson.
That's right.
Used to be a shop called Peter Robinson.
Good there.
I could go and get ribbons there in the days when I wore ribbons. Anyway, this
not
man
much
was...
call for it nowadays, Alan.
Chairman of... No, look, look. Thank you.
I
didn't wear them there.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, no.
I had them on my arm because of my diphtheria jab, if you must know.
Yeah.
This was another Peter Robinson who, by great good fortune, had found himself head of the Woolwich, where he made a great good fortune, by having... Well, it's a lot of this is alleged.
Yes.
But there were a lot of aerial photographs of his house showing the Robinson family running about between the tennis court, the swimming pool, and the stables. All of which have been built as a result of his... He was perfectly entitled to these enormous expenses he was getting. And he would hand in his chitty on a Friday, saying, to lunch with the Prime Minister, £14,000, we discussed building my swimming pool. And they've got very upset. And they've given him the boot. And that poor girl who was that awful, crap-eating smile, who says, good morning, we'll not be able to do those Woolwich ads anymore because we don't trust them. I rather like the Halifax one where they all climb on top of one another. I imagine Peter Robinson at the bottom with 35,000 Halifax investors standing on him. But it's a different company.
This is Peter Robinson, the Woolwich Building Society boss, who was forced to resign amid allegations of discrepancies in his expenses. The audit report was issued last week while he was out doing a routine house survey in the Bahamas. And the scores at the end of round one are, as they always are on the news quiz, for all. Francis, your turn for a question again. What went fizzing into the blue?
Amazing story. And it appeared on April the 1st. I mean, they'd spent $500 million on this relaunch of Pepsi. Mm. They'd had teams of marketing people, consultants, clipboards, the whole lot. And after $500 million, they decided to change the can from red to blue. And what's a good date to do? It's 1st of April. So it was all in the papers on April Fool's Day, and everyone assumed it was just another of those silly stunts. Mm. Especially because they'd bought up Concorde and painted it blue, and it then transpired that this wretched paint couldn't fly at supersonic speed, so all these passengers immediately refused to drink Pepsi. So it's a totally catastrophic marketing thing. But the head of Pepsi says that it means that they are ready for the next millennium. Is that right, I think? Something like that. I couldn't make head or tail of it myself.
There are a lot of advertising stories about, weren't there? Because, I mean, I read the one about Martini, where... Is there something... When you've drunk martini, you have to have a facelift, is that right? Or did I get that wrong?
It's an advertisement on the wireless with pictures, Nick.
Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
I knew there was something like that.
You have to be very beautiful. What? When a girl comes along with roller skates on, do you remember martini? With a tray.
That's it. I knew it was that.
Boils, yes. But you've got to be beautiful, and it's upset lots of children. Or rather, it's upset lots of people who say that children who aren't beautiful won't like this. My child wants to be a drunk, but he's really rather plain. His advert has put him off no end.
This is Pepsi Cola. They're so fed up with always coming second that they've repackaged their product in a drastic shade of blue. The scheme, codenamed Project Blair, was launched by two supermodels Although you can tell they don't actually drink the stuff. They've still got all their own teeth. Of course, kitting something out in blue doesn't necessarily make it more attractive, as Antonio de Sancha discovered with David Meller. However, as you were kind enough to keep out of that discussion, Jeremy, here's a question for you. Who did porridge in their dressing gown?
This is another Holloway prison nightmare story. This poor woman was sent to court, a remand prisoner was sent to court in her 90. And this is presumably Michael Howard's new get tough policy on prisoners, that for your initial remand hearing you'll go in your 90. And then if you make a bail application, that will just be in your pants. And then when you go for full trial, you'll be completely naked. Unless you're a repeat offender or a violent offender, in which case you'll be forced to wear one of Bill Cash's suits or something like that. But yes, it's about humiliating people in the dock by making them be in... ventilated for Mr. Took.
No, no. This was the prisoner from Holloway who, due to a lack of clothing, had to appear in court wearing a pink nylon nightdress. The judge was horrified at this. Then it's always embarrassing to find someone else who's wearing the same thing as you. Nick, have a listen to this.
Sitting on a darker bay, wasting time.
And your question is, which bright spark went back to the yard? He's offering a bit of solidarity
there. Yes, I would do, yes. Mr. Lech Walesa.
That's right.
A president of Poland, turned up to do some electrical work at his old shipyard in Gdansk. He turned up with his toolbox, 200 photographers, stayed for a couple of minutes and left. It's more or less like my electrician, actually. John, I didn't mean that, honestly. Come back, please. And that's what it is. And apparently he can't afford to be an ex-president, so he has to be an electrician instead.
Right.
For about 30s lottie an hour.
Is he going to run again? Is it trying to imply that he is deeply working class, like John Major does?
Yes.
Remember during the last election when John Major went to Brixton and bought a fish? This is a man who lives in central London. I mean, there's endless people who can pop out and get some fish. He doesn't need to go down to SW9 to get fish. And yet he goes, I mean, no, in the middle of an election when you're very busy, what would the one thing be that you were looking for in Brixton? Not fish, I can tell you. No wonder that Portillo has that curiously detached air.
This is former Polish President Lech Walesa, who returned to work as an electrician after 7 years. Colleagues were delighted. Maybe he'd finally finished mending the coffee machine. It's rare for a deposed leader to return to his former profession, although barricades are being set up outside garden gnome factories. Just in case. Alan, which teenage love story is going under the hammer?
This is really rather heartbreaking. This is about the trawling of royal waste bins. So you find things like little milkman's notes from Fergie. Pint of semi-skin and three for the weekend, stuff like that. there is a market for everything. And these were some letters belonging to Princess Elizabeth, the great ATS sergeant, about her love affair with... it wasn't a love affair then. I mean, she'd met this bloke with a nice chin. And it was about her and the Duke of Edinburgh. And she said, one phrase caught my eye, she said he had a very small MG. And it was bright red. So that sort of latched somewhere in my brain.
I used
offensively at such times as I could get an audience to respond to it. They didn't, I thought I'd do something else.
I really liked the bit of that story where she complained in one of these letters to her old maid or whoever it was that it had been rather disappointing that her meeting with Philip had been blighted by the press, and she'd been chased down the street by a photographer, and I thought she should have been around today.
Absolutely. These are the letters from the young Princess Elizabeth to a royal biographer, which gave a fascinating insight into her 8-year courtship with Prince Philip. She first set eyes on him when she was only 13. But they soon realised what a lot they had in common, notably a couple of grandparents. The letters... the And the scores at the end of the second round are still tied at 8-8. We start round three with a notice in King's Lambourne Parish News.
Women's Institute. Next month's meeting will feature Mrs. Beryl Mayle's lecture, Paint a Picture While Your Buns Are in the Oven.
It's a good trick if you can do it. Anyway, thank you, the population of Lambourne, for sending that in. Francis, why won't the train be taking the strain?
Oh, this is because it's another of those privatised industries which always misbehave, to our great entertainment. And this one has used to give railway permits to its staff to let them get to work, but it now says that they must come to work by car because the trains are so unreliable. Which would be unexceptionable, except it's rail track, the company question. Is this right?
That's right, absolutely.
So they're all going to have to drive in, unless they're getting to the scene of a rail crash, in which case they are allowed to travel by train free of charge, because it's the only way of getting there, which shows what their expectations are.
Is that an expected rail crash, or
the
one that's actually happened?
Rail track run future.
Yes, indeed.
Well, they'll be organising them, just so they can get their free train passes.
This is the news that rail track is being run by the wrong kind of idiot. Bosses have announced that only the best is good enough for their staff, so obviously they won't be wanting to use the railways, will they? A rail track spokesman denied this had been a PR gaffe as he unveiled the latest planned improvements to the tracks, tarmac and white lines. Jeremy, here's a piece of music for you.
Now, I don't care what the weatherman says, when the weatherman says it's raining. You never hear me complaining, I'm certain the sun will shine.
That was the lead into Jeepers Creepers by Louis Armstrong. Question is, what reports were arguably lost at sea?
I wasn't sure if this was true or not, given that it was on April Fool's Day. And I still don't know if it's true that the shipping forecast, that venerable Radio 4 institution, said they're going to axe certain coastal stations. Bridlington, I think, was one. Dover are going to be axed. And certain inland waters like Walton on the Naze and the pond on Tooting Common. And now this is appalling to me, because the shipping forecast, I mean, we all sit there and it makes us feel that all is right with the world. We sit. It's like Alistair Cook's letter from America. You've no idea what he's on about. But you just think... It just sounds wonderful. And Charlotte, can you say Dogger Fischer German Bite for us?
I can. Dogger Fischer German Bite.
No! I love it when you talk dirty. Why didn't you just get Charlotte to read the entire thing?
We've started this hair. We ought to run with it. And Charlotte will know in places like South of Tira that don't exist at all. They're part of Broadcasting House. Why do we need coastal stations? We have satellites. And when they say coastal stations, I imagine a man in corduroy trousers and oilskins looking like those blokes who used to stand on the side of Scott's emulsion bottles, coming out with his cooked breakfast, sniffing the wind, sticking a finger up, having a look at his cone, going back inside and going, on one of those little phones and phoning it. We can't need coastal stations when we've got those little flecks of things whizzing round saying, good heavens, there's a light shower in Abu Dhabi, and they know it within 4 seconds flat. What is a coastal station for, Charlotte? Answer now.
No. I'm going to save her from that. That's not fair. Why should she just say that? It's the same sort of logic that means we've now got our naval headquarters in Northwood, isn't it? Did you know that? The headquarters of Naval High Command is in Northwood, which is about as far away from the sea as you can get.
It's very handy for the M40, though.
Dick, who has spied an efficiency saving?
I'm very attracted by this story, that MI5 are going to be subjected to performance-related pay. And it's a very, very simple idea. At the end of the week, you tot up the number of spies you caught, and if you've caught five, you get a tick in box number one, and you get a pay rise, and if you don't catch any spies, you get a tick in box number five, and you're sacked. It's as simple as that.
Do you get air miles and stuff like that? Is it worth signing on, MI5?
But they've always been on performance-related pay anyway. It was just it used to be in rubles. It was only just...
Yes, absolutely. And in spite of everything, the scores at the end of round three are still tied at 12-all. Jeremy, what rip-off labels are hard to swallow?
Is this to do with pizzas and things?
What?
Is this the pizza story?
I don't know about pizza. The pizza
there was a thing
in
one of the papers about food inspectors investigating pizza places. And it's a source of endless fascination to me, because there's this proliferation of pizza outlets. There's Pizza Hut, there's Pizza Land, which is, of course, much bigger than Pizza Hut, because it's a nation as opposed to a mere lean-to. And we've got one in Streatham called Pizza Chalet, which I think you can rent out in the summer. But they always have a style. They always try and top each other by having different toppings. They'll have, like, Hawaiian style, Mexican style, Indian style, Chinese style, and yet never an Italian style pizza. If you ask for that, they just put another pizza on the top. And or a tin of ravioli over it. But, apparently it's not cheese on pizzas. It's cheese style white glurp that they put on. And these trading standards investigator people have found that it's...
I'm sorry. It's all to do with Douglas Hogg, I think.
It's nothing to do with Douglas Hogg.
He's responsible. Don't let him off.
Look. I know what it is, but I've got it written down
here.
No,
he used to be known at Oxford as Hugless Dog. Which is very sweet, because it's exactly what he is, this sort of rather pathetic, mangy, unloved creature. Who's forced to wear a strange bushman's hat to try and make himself endearing.
Anyway, in spite of everything that's been said, it was the Consumers Association report that revealed food producers are skimping on expensive ingredients and using cheap food substitutes. Scampi can mean fishtails, cheese can mean soya, and snack pot can mean snack pot. They even discovered a steak pie that contained no beef whatsoever, so it wasn't all bad news. When it comes to sausages, the term meat can include fat, skin, crystal and sinew, so now we know what's meant by the old expression, walls have ears. Nick, who could soon be taking something for the weekend?
This is the male contraceptive.
It is.
And my main view of it is taken from Mr. Michael Winner, who described it as a pain in the bum. And he apparently said there was no way he was going to be subjecting himself to regular injections before he went out, obviously for his meal tasting, clearly. And there is some dispute as to whether men will ever actually do it, if you see what I mean. And how would you know that they had? Would a girl have to check a man for needle marks or what? It's an absolutely appalling idea, frankly.
The idea of some young thing running her binoculars over Winner's bum. I mean, really, some of the images that have conjured up on this family programme. Are you sure that's not a mole or a wart? No, it's a coddle.
They said on the radio, on the telly, it said the pill works by making men awash with testosterone. Mm. So presumably what happens is you just get very irresponsible and start showing off around the barbecue. And you just get too close and cauterise yourself on the hot coal.
But also, this man, Professor Wu, who announced it, said that his great breakthrough... But then when you look at the research, it has all these side effects. He admits that all these patients he tried it on then developed acne, greasy skin... huge weight gain, they become irritable and generally thoroughly unpleasant. And he said it was a great success because they didn't get any women pregnant while they were doing these tests. And is it any surprise?
Well, there are no bargains, are they, with all that going on?
Well, you just described Michael Winner then, actually.
Alan, where is flogging a dead horse a hairy process?
I was hoping for a savoury question. I mean, a sort of... This is about Shergar.
It is.
Which is now in worse shape than Michael Winner. Shergar may have been dug up in the course of searching for mad cow disease. Somewhere in Ireland, they've dug up something which resembles this horse. And the only way to find out whether it actually is Shergar is to get in touch with a student hare hunter. And apparently, many years ago, when Shergar were nobbed a lad, souvenir hunters used to go and pull hares out of him. And some student has now fronted up that he has the hare of Shergar in a case on the mantelpiece. And this is what they will use, like a sort of DNA sample. They're going to truck the remains of this horse round to this kid's house and examine it against the hare he's got. It's a horrid story. Don't pull your lip at me like that. It is absolutely true. It's nastier than the other one. It is that, isn't it?
Exactly so.
He'll never race again, of course, but he may be fit enough to fight Frank Bruno.
You are a silly ass, you are.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis, have you brought us a cutting?
I have indeed.
God bless you.
Newbury Weekly News, scene of the anti-bypass protest, and it's about one of these protesters who was up in court. Mr. Rod Earth, who changed his full name by deed poll into a 69-word anti-roads message, was up in court last week, and he was asked to give his name, and he couldn't read it out because he said he hadn't got his contact lenses, so the clerk of the court had to read it out for him. Mrs. Butler, the clerk of the court, said, "Are you red hats, green hats, white hats and police hats guard the trolls' work of the chainsaw gangs doing their little bit to build a wasteland where once was beauty, making dirty money, dirty profits. The fat controllers sit behind their piles of money, weaving their power plays. So in this dinosaur they like to call democracy, love and power to the tribe of Echo Warriors and Mother Earth." "Yes, that is my name," said Mr. Earth.
"But most people call me Dick." Thank you, Francis. Jeremy?
What?
Have you got a cutting for Jeremy?
No, I couldn't be bothered this week. It all seems so trivial when you consider what a terrible world we live in. No, I have. This is from the
Western... instead you brought something from the Daily Express. Yeah. Come on.
Yes, the paramilitary wing of the Daily Mail. This is the... this is the Western Daily Press from the 19th of March, and it's about a drugs case. Michael Marlowe, the author of a grow-your-own cannabis book, was jailed for a year yesterday for incitement in the first prosecution of its kind in Britain. Marlowe, aged 51, from the Forest of Dean, wrote his book under the name Maria Warner in a deliberate play on the word marijuana. Detective Inspector Tony Bree said, "It was the best book on growing cannabis I've ever seen."
Good. Nick, what have you brought for us?
Well, I'd like to apologise in advance to anyone from Scotland, because this is an extract from a speech by Lord Mackay of Clashfern, and it really has to be done in a voice which is not, of course, anything like his, but does show that it's not me. Here it goes. "I would like us to focus specifically today upon what I intend to call marriage support services. It may help if I explain exactly what I mean by that term. By marriage support services, I mean the full range of services which exist to support marriage."
That was Alan Bennett you just did.
Alan.
I can't really do a Knaresborough accent, but this is from the Knaresborough Gazette. It says, "Our staff photographer, Tom Sanders, has confessed to doubts about the success of the talk he gave to Bishop Dunn's school last Thursday on the subject, Does the Camera Ever Lie? He projected a photograph apparently taken at the centre court showing Adolf Hitler playing tennis with Winston Churchill and asked the audience what was wrong with it. There was a long silence until one boy finally said, 'It's not in colour.'"
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores. Well, Francis and Jerry have got a noble 14, but Alan and Nick have pipped them because they got 17 and are this week's winners. Well done, gentlemen. Before we leave you, here's a story seen in the Coventry Evening Telegraph and sent in by Jay Carner of Coventry.
Goalkeeper Shane Kehoe capped a great display between the posts with the worst blunder of his career. Shane, who plays for Tarman in the Wexford League in Ireland, had just pulled off a memorable save when his cap blew off into the back of the net. Shane went to pick it up, realizing too late that he still had the ball in his hands.
Anyway, ladies, that's it for today. Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corrin, Francis Wheen, Jeremy Hardy and Nick Clark. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and Adam Bostock-Smith. The producer was Alid Evans.